Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 110. My name is Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
I don't know why 110 feels like more significant to me than, like, I mean, 100 was huge, but like 110 just feels like we're really ramping up now.
I was gonna say, we're gonna freak out like every 10 episodes or so. I'll be like, we're at 120, we're at 130. Yeah. Like, it's gonna feel, I don't know, it just feels significant. I don't know why. Every 10 or so episodes, it's just gonna feel like we've done this thing. 125 is gonna be like,
I know. Oh, that's gonna be cool.
It's a lot, but yeah. You know, we're just crazy. It's
It is officially December 1st. First of all, can't believe it's December.
Yeah. November when? Phew. Like, yeah. Usually for me, I think the month that usually goes fastest for me is like March, February or March.
Okay.
Because it just, I feel like we barely start it and it races to the end.
I mean, February makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah. This year, I think November took the cake. Yeah. I feel like we just started. I feel like I just got Iron Flame in my hot little hands. And here it is December and I still haven't written my review. So those who care at all, I'm so sorry. It's going to happen. I just am absolutely beside myself and there's just a lot of random stuff going on right now. Eating up time things that I don't have.
I saw somebody on Twitter say November showed up, grabbed a plate, and checked out.
I mean,
and I was like, that actually is exactly what it feels like.
So accurate this year. Like, some years, I feel like it drags because I'm like, oh, I just want to get to Christmas because I love Christmas. And it's like, is it December yet? Like, and then December always goes quick for me. So, you know.
Yeah.
But November this year just, it's like gone. So, it's
But fun. It is December. It is time of Percy Jackson.
Right? It's the month of Percy Jackson.
Yes. We are less than 3 weeks away from the official premiere of Percy Jackson and the Olympians on Disney+, December 20th. There's just a lot of excitement going on. A lot of people are like, okay, We're here.
Let's do this.
It's so close now. Yeah. So there are a lot of amazing things coming up, which we will tell you about when we can. And just a lot of excitement going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to give us any feedback, your hopes and dreams for the show, anything about the podcast, ideas, any of that kind of stuff, you can contact us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. I was a little surprised after last week because we didn't have a lot to talk about, but this week we actually do have a couple of important news items to talk about, which was really cool, and they all center around the show. Makes sense because at this point we're so close to it, they're starting to really push a lot of promotion.
Especially now that they can, with the strike finally being over, like, it's everything is just kind of ramping up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We do have official confirmation of the episode titles now, and I love how they're presented, like, the real chapter titles in a book with, like, all the periods and then the number, like you would find in a book. So I thought that was really clever, and they are all the titles that we have talked about before, so that's really awesome. And I just love that they pulled it directly from the book because it makes, first of all, Rick is kind of well known for his chapter titles.
Yeah.
And also they are, it gives you a good sense of the comedy of the show.
Right.
And it just makes sense. Like, they're going to be accurate to what's going on in the episodes.
And I mean, those of us that have obviously read this book and know the story, we kind of have an idea of what's going to be in each episode.
Right.
But I'm sorry, any new person coming into this is going to read, I become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom and have no idea what's happening. Or, like, we take a zebra to Vegas. The rest of us are going, I know what's in that episode.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. They have no clue. Like, this gives away nothing if you haven't read this. Like, the Garden Gnome Emporium means something to me and you.
Right.
Does not mean anything to my mother.
Yeah.
She would have no idea what's going on. So, you know, like, I'm very excited that these give us an idea of kind of how they're breaking down the season, how they're breaking down the book. But, like, gives away nothing to new people. They can enjoy this series, you know, from start to finish without being spoiled by the episode titles being given away so early.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's just an extra special thing that they're Rick's type, like, chapters. Yeah. I mean, it came right out of there. They just pulled out the ones that would work best for the episodes and called it a day. He does such a great job with them. There's no reason not to. Like, why not just use it? It's all the work is done right there.
And it'll be really fun. Like, for season two, when we, you know, get a green light on that, we could try to guess which chapter titles they'll use.
Heck yeah.
That could be really fun.
That would be a good time.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention that it looks as though Percy, Ceres, and Rick are doing a lot more on Instagram than Twitter. They didn't even promote the TV spot that we'll be talking about on Twitter, and the poster that came out today was only on Instagram so far. I mean, they might put it out later, but, like, all of a sudden I'm going through Twitter, because that's where I get pretty much all of our news. I don't scroll through Instagram like I do with Twitter. And everybody was, like, posting this poster, and I was like, where did this come from? And I went to Percy Ceres and couldn't find it, and I was like, I'm going to check Instagram. And sure enough, it was on Rick's Instagram. So,
well, I think a lot of that stems from there are a lot of companies that are kind of quietly not doing business with X/Twitter anymore. Yeah. Because of some of the things that Elon's been up to recently, and they just don't like the politics of what's going on.
Yeah.
So a lot of, like, I think Disney in general is not posting on there. Specific shows, I think, are allowed to, but Disney in general, their account has gone very quiet.
I have seen a lot of people talking about
that. So, like, it's nothing about the show, it's nothing about, you know, don't worry about that.
Right.
It's just Disney kind of making a statement with X and that whole thing. So, yeah.
Which is maybe the one thing that could either get Elon in line or shut Twitter down.
Right now, he did an interview. This does not matter. So, I'm sorry. He did an interview the other day where he said, if it fails because they decide to block to not advertise, then it fails. He doesn't give two craps about X. Like, he acts, or he's at least acting like he doesn't.
Yeah.
He firmly says, like, if it fails because of them, then they're the ones who made it fail, not me. Like, I think he's trying to tank it, and he's trying to blame it on something else.
Yeah.
So he can say, Disney decided that they weren't going to advertise on my thing anymore, and that's what caused me to fail, not me.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
whatever.
He can believe that, but nobody else will.
Right? It's his own fault. He ruined it. So, yeah, we'll have to keep an eye, closer eye on the Instagram and that, but
there are still plenty of places to find it.
And eventually it will pop up on X because people will share it or whatever. But
I refuse to call it
I'm
X.
Sorry, it's Twitter. No, I do too, honestly. It's just like, since I was listening to this interview with him talking about it, and he keeps referring to it as X, so now it's like half in my head, even though it is Twitter.
My friend asked me the other day, is it X or is it Twitter? I was like, it's Twitter. We do not call it X in this household. And they were like, okay.
It's true, though. It's true.
But speaking of that Percy Jackson TV spot, very exciting. There is a YouTube video of it. It's pretty short, but it gives us some... It's pretty short, but it gives you a couple of scenes that we haven't gotten before, including some pretty important ones, which we'll talk about in like 2 seconds. But it starts off with Chiron saying, Percy, I know you feel powerless, but you're not. And it shows Percy attacking the Minotaur. So, like, again, that seems to be, like, a very big thing that they're pushing, which makes sense because that's really his first test as a demigod is the Minotaur. And it kind of informs, like, what happens there with Sally informs literally the rest of the book/season.
And I think it also comes so early in the series. They can give you a lot of that, and it'll be done by the first episode. So they're not really spoiling a lot of what happens in the rest of it by kind of focusing on so much of the centaur or the Minotaur stuff. So I think it's a good move. It's a good move.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's also very like intense.
It is
striking.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Chiron continues to say, you are special. When you're ready to hear what the gods have in store for you, they'll tell you. And during this, we get a couple of glimpses. We get the capture the flag scene. And I feel like this is the first time we've kind of seen it from this angle where we see both teams on either side of the creek. And it kind of looked to me like Chiron was sitting on top of a big boulder in the background. So this is probably like right before they send them off to get set up and like to strategize with their team and everything.
Makes sense.
So that's really exciting. I I know the capture the flag scene is like at the top of most people's lists because it's going to be so important. And speaking of, we see Clarice and Percy fighting, and she looks very intense with her spear, and he's got like a cut on his face. And I love the idea that, like, we're actually seeing the kids doing their stunts and the fight choreography. I mean, at this point, like, there's really not a lot of, like, super dangerous, like, intense things. They're just kind of sword fighting. But we saw that behind the scenes video of Walker doing, like, sword fighting, and he was really good at it. And just the fact that, like, we can see them doing these things, I love, because...
Yeah.
I can't remember if I mentioned it on this podcast before. I probably have. But, like, fight choreography is, like, my thing. Like, I love it so much. So, mm-hmm. I think it's really cool. And we know that Dior was training a lot to be Clarice. And so, I'm just super excited to see that. Especially when he fights Adam Copeland. That's going to be amazing.
It's going to be crazy.
We also see Percy being claimed as Annabeth watches on. He's standing in the, I believe it's the lake.
Yeah.
And I'm just obsessed with the look on Percy's face when he, like, looks up at this trident above his head, because he looks, like, a little confused and surprised, and he's like, you know, why are you staring at me? And he notices this giant thing floating over his head.
Why is this giant fork floating over his head?
Yeah, exactly. So, the number one question that I wanted to ask you, are you disappointed that we saw the claiming ahead of the TV show?
I think I'm one that's a little torn both ways. Like, that's such a poignant, important moment for Percy especially, but, like, we go on to then, you know, it's one of the things that he petitions the gods for and is like, this is what we need. And so, like, it's such an important moment in the whole pantheon of the Percy universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I would have liked to have saved it.
Yeah.
Personally. Like, I just think that's a moment that they could have just held on to. Could have given us anything right before it or right after it, but, like...
Or even him looking up and not showing the trident or something.
Right. But, like, give us that actual moment. You know, I kind of would have liked that. And I do love that we didn't really get any audio from that.
Right.
So, like, we still have something to kind of hold out for, to hear what he says, what Annabeth says, you know. But at the same time, I don't think it's, like, it's an important moment that doesn't give away the store. So I understand why you include something like that in this trailer. It's visual. It's striking.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really understand what's going on. Like, why is this boy standing in the water with a thing over his head? Like,
yeah.
What's going on? But, like, it, you know, it's a very telling, important moment at the same time. So, like, I get why they put it in there. It's not giving away too much. We already know, you know, Percy, son of Poseidon. Like, we know all that stuff. But it's like, at the same time, I wish maybe they could have held that one little bit back.
Yeah, I'm leaning more toward I wish they had held it back. I do like that we got this because it is very visually striking, like you said, and it's so beautiful. And I've been seeing a lot of GIFs and a lot of still images of this singular moment with it hanging over his head, and it is, like, just such a beautiful shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad that is in my brain and I don't have to wait 3 weeks to see it.
Like, it could have looked kind of hokey, but I honestly like how they did the glowing.
Yeah.
And it just looks... It looks natural, which is weird.
Yes.
Because it's not natural, but it kind of looks like it fits. Like,
yeah. I really, really loved it. But I agree. I think that it's such a big moment that it would have been really nice to save it. I think it's a good thing that, like you said, they didn't give us any audio from it. It really wasn't the scene. It was him looking up and then the wide shot. And that's about it. And I think if it had been anything more than that, I would have been really disappointed. But since that's all we got, I'm actually pretty okay with it.
Yeah.
My other thing is people who don't know what's going on in this story, and there are people who haven't read the books that will be tuning into the show.
Quite a few.
Yeah. They're not going to know that he's the son of Poseidon, except if they saw this TV spot, now they might be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I do kind of feel like they gave something away to the audience who hasn't read the books.
Yeah.
So that was a little disappointing to me, but in the grand scheme of things, I mean, there's a lot more going on, and there's a much bigger twist coming.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, I can see why maybe they would want to do this versus something else. I randomly tweeted out, like, oh, yeah, I always pictured the trident above his head way smaller. Like, just the top part of the trident, maybe glowing, like, blue, and just kind of hanging over his head. A lot of people, because I got so many responses of so many people saying the same thing, and I felt so vindicated by that, because a lot of them were like, yeah, I think only less than 5 people were like, oh yeah, I pictured it this big.
Yeah.
And was it Henry? One of our listeners was like, no, I totally pictured it this big. And I was like, I mean, it makes more sense because the gods are dramatic that it would be this big.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised by how large it was, and I was really happy that so many people were like, yeah, I pictured it gold, or I pictured it, like, much smaller. A lot of people saying that it was, like, the Sims diamond over his head. And I was like, that's exactly how I pictured it.
I mean, about that size.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of floating there. Little teeny thing.
Like, you could, like, go up and touch it. And,
right.
Yeah.
Like, I expected him to, like, try and poke it or something. Yeah. You know? Like, yeah, definitely did not picture a giant trident over his head. And I think, while the big trident, I think, does leave an impact and makes kind of more sense when you think of the gods being dramatic, it also means that they had to, like, zoom really far out to get the whole thing in. So I'm like, it would have been easier if they'd done a smaller one, because then you could have, like, gotten every bit of it on, you know, on Walker's face. Like, you could have had the whole... Instead, you have to be back quite a bit to get the whole thing in picture, and it's like...
Yeah. I honestly like this better than what was in my head.
Nice.
I'm really, really happy with the choice that they made. It surprised me, but in a really good way, which is always nice to have when you're, you know, somebody's adapting one of your favorite series of all time.
Right.
I do agree with all of people that were like, it just makes so much sense that it would be that big, because they're dramatic. They're the gods.
Yeah.
They're, you know, larger than life.
They don't do anything halfway.
Yeah. And that way, too, like, nobody's going to miss that he is the son of Poseidon.
Nope.
So I thought that was great.
I did find it funny when people started asking, like, what about the other kids?
I was,
like,
just gonna say that. Yeah.
Because, like, by the end of this book, we see other kids that get claimed in this manner. And, like, people were talking about, like, Annabeth would have a giant owl over her head, or, like, a giant lyre for Apollo.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm now like, picturing, like, it can't be, would it be as big as the trident, or, like, you know, it's got to be bigger, right?
Yeah.
Because they're gods, and, like, if one god does one thing, another's going to be like, well, mine's got to be better. So, like,
I can imagine Zeus being like, mine's the biggest, nobody's is allowed to be bigger than mine.
Like, it's a thunderbolt the size of a, you know, pine tree.
Yeah.
Like, massive. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do other symbols when we kind of get to that point. If they even do it, who knows? Maybe they have some other way they want to kind of illustrate it or whatever. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very excited to see potentially other people being claimed, even if it's not in season one, you know, moving forward. Like, we know we'll see Tyson's and all of that, which, I mean, it'll be the same thing. But I'm definitely interested in seeing what other people... I can imagine Apollo... Well, I was going to say, you're right, it would probably be a lyre for Apollo, but, like, what if it was just a giant sun?
Right.
And it's like, nobody can look at it.
Yeah.
He would be, like, really dramatic about it. I love it. We also get a better / longer shot of Grover being pulled into Tartarus by the shoes, which are a red Converse.
And I appreciate this because I still missed it in the other
trailer.
Yeah. Like, I still hadn't, like, seen
it. It was very fast.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why, but for some reason I kept missing it or whatever. So I'm very glad they included this because now I feel like I've seen it. And, it looks very well done. I like the look. I'm interested to see... How it plays out.
Another thing that I was kind of questioning, like, of course we know the shoes are evil and that they're going to be very bad news for Grover. Nobody else does. So I'm wondering, people who don't know the book, if they're looking at this and they recognize that the shoes are pulling him somewhere bad.
Which I think is hard to pin down.
Yeah, like, I don't think that's necessarily given. Because if they can recognize that, then when they see the shoes introduced, they're going to know that the shoes are up to no good.
Right.
But I don't really think people are going to put that together.
I don't think so either. I think they're going to assume that this giant black hole is pulling him towards it.
Right.
Like it's, yeah, it's whatever this thing is that they're moving toward, that's the thing. I don't, yeah, think new fans are going to realize it's the shoes. I had to, like, look for them, and I saw the little wings and, yeah, was like, yep, that's, yeah, yeah. So, like, I think it's just small enough of a detail that unless you know what you're looking for, you're not going to necessarily see it.
Right.
But we'll have to see. Maybe we'll have to, like, after the first season, bring in a non-super fan,
yeah,
friend of ours, because we've got a few of them, like, make them watch it and then be like, did you get this? Did, yeah, you get this? Did you see this in the trailer? Did you, you know...
We should probably, that'd, yeah, reach out to a couple of people and be like, just keep track of your thoughts as you're watching, right, and then we'll bring you on the pod and see.
If you want to be on the pod, we have need of, you know, yeah, like, that would be fun.
Yeah. The last shot in the trailer is them almost getting, or last new shot, I should say, is them almost getting eaten by Cerberus. I mean, it looks like Grover does get eaten.
It does.
And, like, obviously he doesn't, but, like, that is a close call. How are they outrunning this giant dog?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, and but Cerberus looks great.
He does.
I think all of the CGI looks really good. I'm super excited for it, and I think...
And the general look of the underworld looks really... Like, just, yeah, the tone difference of the rest of the show, yeah, versus the
I
underworld.
I love that Camp Half-Blood is so bright. Like, mm-hmm, it's so vibrant. The grass is really green. The water is really blue.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the sky just looks nice. Like, everything is just so bright. The orange shirts and everything. And then when you go to the underworld, it's going to be very black and gray. And, you know, I think that was really... It's going to be really nice to kind of see the difference and, like, how that informs our viewing, like, the atmosphere, how it'll make us feel watching it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so Deadline put out an article that said Percy Jackson trailer amasses 84 million views in 10 days. That is a lot of views.
A lot.
And I just love that Deadline wrote this article. I mean, that is what the headline of the article was, which tells me that people are noticing how popular that trailer is, how excited people are for the show. And as long as that can translate into people continuing to watch the show, like tuning in the premiere and then watching all 8 episodes, I don't think we're going to have any trouble getting a season 2.
I think so too. You know, we've heard about Rick and the writers kind of breaking into season 2. Mm-hmm. Like they've started working on it. They haven't been greenlit yet, but... It, you know, Disney didn't pick this up not understanding what kind of fan base is behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, Rick is one of, if not the most best-selling middle grade author of all time. Like, I'm pretty sure he's at the top of the list. And there's a reason for that. It's because adults like these books as much as kids do. They love sharing them with their kids because they read them. You know, new generations are finding them all the time. Rick has learned his lessons as he's written, and he has written his books to be more inclusive, and there's very few authors that seem to be really up for that challenge, mm-hmm, you know? And so it's like, Rick is different than so many authors that are out there. And I really think Disney just knew what they were getting their hands on here. He had been published with Disney for so long. I'm shocked it took them this long to, yeah, recognize what he had to offer and what, yeah, his characters and world had to offer. So yeah, I very sincerely believe there is a very slim, slim possibility that we do not see season 2, 3, possibly 4 and 5. Mm-hmm. I think they created season 1 and created this whole thing with the intention of 5 seasons. I think it would have to absolutely tank in order for that not to be a reality at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I feel,
and
like,
it's not going to.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, like, I'm very excited because I feel like we really are gonna get to see this whole story play out. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're gonna get shortchanged. It's just a matter of, you know, formality of they have to wait until season one has been out, till they have numbers that they can put on things to make sure, you know, that they can greenlight season two.
Right.
So, like, I don't think there's much of a chance that we're not going to get it.
I would bet a significant amount of money that we're getting season two. And I'm trying to be very objective about that statement, because if you look at it, I mean, every time something happens, like Percy Jackson was trending this morning on Twitter because the poster came out. Every time something is mentioned, it just blows up. That trailer is huge. That's a lot of views in 10 days. People are very interested in this.
I mean, he's still on the top of so many bestseller lists. Oh, yeah,
and he's putting out new books. Like, there's so much talk going around Percy Jackson, both the show, previous books, new books. He's a sure bet because he's written so many popular books and he's involved, and Disney knows that the fans are going to appreciate that. He's been talking up the show, and that's going to translate into more people tuning in.
Which is also new for his fans. We're not used to Rick being a proponent of the adaptations. Right. Like, you know, so it's really new and fun to have him on board and to know that this is signed off on by him.
And Disney put a lot of money into the show, which might be a little scary, but you have to remember that this is on par with The Mandalorian, which is like one of, if not possibly their most popular show on the streaming service.
I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure for Disney Plus, I think it is.
Yeah. And the fact that it's on a streaming service and not, you know, have to tune into the channel, which, like, a lot of people don't have cable these days.
Right.
Like, the fact that it's on the streaming service is, I think, a really good choice on their part, because people can go find it whenever they want. They can rewatch it whenever they want. I think they're in it for the long haul, to be perfectly honest. I would be absolutely shocked if we didn't get a season two. My bigger question is, will they say, okay, we're doing season two, or will they say, we're doing season two and three?
That's, honestly, I would be a little shocked if they didn't greenlight it. Like, the only reason they haven't done the greenlight for season two so far is that season one is an unproven entity. Like, they have all of this, you know, attention and social media presence and, like, all of that. Like, they've seen the power of this fandom in the watches, in the views of trailers and all of that. But, like, until they actually have solid numbers, it's hard to, like, quantify exactly what they have here. So once it's live and being watched by people in their homes, then I feel like they'll feel that energy even more, and we will have a chance to get a green light for seasons two, three, so on.
Yeah.
Also, very important, Disney Plus has had great success with Star Wars series. Mm. Not just Mandalorian, which continues to be their biggest.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Andor did really well, didn't it?
Yes, yeah. And so did, honestly, I think Ahsoka did well, too.
I've heard good things about that.
There's really only been one that didn't do as well, but it still did great. They have not yet mastered bringing other products into that same sphere. Like, the Marvel thing has not necessarily worked out the way they thought.
Yeah.
WandaVision was massive, but then ever since then, each one has kind of tapered off a little bit, and they haven't quite captured that magic again. I feel like this is the answer to, like, The Mandalorian being kind of more for adults.
Mm-hmm.
It is watchable for children, but it's pretty violent. There's a lot of stuff that does go over kids' heads, just all the politics of everything going on. Like, this is for kids and their parents to watch. This is Disney's bread and butter.
Yeah.
And they don't have that yet on Disney Plus. They don't have a property, a franchise that is aimed at children that has regular, you know, like, they just don't have anything quite like this yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this has the possibilities are just endless for Percy on Disney.
Yeah, and I was actually going to bring up, too, kind of in line with that, Greek mythology, like, adaptations and stuff aren't that common. So this is a little bit of a new market. I mean, there is stuff out there, obviously. There's been plenty of movies and all that, but a lot of them are for adults. I don't know if I can think of any Greek mythology property that's, like, aimed at children. Even, like, Blood of Zeus, which was an animated show on Netflix, was, like, kind of violent and adult-like.
I mean, there are some, like, YA-ish, kind of, like, older YA book series. Like, they aren't like, romance where it's, like, super explicit,
right.
But it's definitely not meant for kids.
Yeah.
Like, I can think of stuff like that, but you're right. Like, other than Hercules the movie.
Right.
The Disney movie. I can't really think of anything else that is, like, Greek mythology aimed at kids. And it's such a a rich, fun world full of ideas and characters and whatnot. And I mean,
if they want to, it's too bad that King Chronicles is already at Netflix, but if they want to pick up Magnus Chase and stuff like that, like, they could basically do what they're doing with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and make a Rick Riordan Cinematic Universe and do a whole bunch of other mythology-based shows or movies or whatever. And also, like, even if they weren't from Rick, like, I would be super into that. Not to mention Rick Riordan Presents.
Well, it's like RRP is waiting right there.
Yeah.
They own the imprint. I'm sure they have first dibs on film rights for that sort of stuff. Like, I mean, we know that Kane Chronicles are at Netflix, but that's because I don't think Disney took up the option on so much of this, you know, when it first was coming out and all that. So Netflix had a chance to option it and to make those movies, which also could be great on their own.
And they totally could have, they might have outbid Disney, too.
Totally
Disney
possible.
Disney was, like, more interested in Percy Jackson, which is kind of, like, the anchor.
Right. Totally possible. But, like, yeah, Disney could still pick up all these other things, and you're absolutely right. With RRP sitting right there, it's endless possibilities for different mythologies to come into play and to just tell more rich and richer and richer and richer stories for middle grade, younger kids. You know, it's they're not as alienating as the really complex world of Star Wars is sometimes.
Right. Like, I honestly, I can't get into Star Wars. I don't dislike it, but it's just, it's not for me.
I like the general universe. Like, I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff that goes on. And once I get into it, I can watch it, but I would not classify myself as a Star Wars fan.
Right.
I'm a movie fan who appreciates the movies and appreciates what that universe brings to the world of movies. But, like, in general, not necessarily one of my fandoms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you there. That, like, yeah, I think this is going to be very unique and special for Disney, and I'm just, you know, beside myself in hoping that it absolutely explodes, it gives them exactly what they want, and it's just the start of all of this other programming for kids. I mean, Disney has had the corner on the animation market for so long when it comes to animated movies. It's about time that they, you know, take on something else for kids. Like, if you want, not just Disney TV, like Disney Channel programming, which also was a juggernaut of its time.
Yeah.
Now you've got this streaming platform that has been so centered on, like, adult stories that it seems ready for something about this.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, Star Wars is very sci-fi heavy. Marvel is very, like, urban fantasy.
Yeah.
This is, like, straight fantasy. This is, like, monsters and gods and stuff like that.
Special powers.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like it's a new category for them to kind of delve into that could offer. I mean, those are the kind of things that I like reading about and watching. So, like, if they can corner the market on that, then I think that they could. Are we convincing you yet, Disney? Like, do you want us to write an essay? Because I will.
Well, and I mean, this is completely random, but, like, fantasy tends to explode in popularity when there's real world consequences. Like, when things in the real world get dark and scary, fantasy tends to explode in popularity because people want to actually escape from what is going on.
Yeah.
So they take on books and things that let them go to a new world and experience something else. And I think that's, you know, the world's in a lot of turmoil, has been for quite a while now, and I think that kind of coincides with fantasy has kind of stepped out in its own as a genre, too, lately. And I think this is just the perfect time for Disney to be getting on the kids need an escape. Disney Plus needs something for kids. Let's do it. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, we're not trying to convince you guys, I guess. I don't know. We're convincing ourselves that this is going to be bigger than we can imagine, and it's just, we can't hold it in.
I
just have to keep talking because it's like,
it's really exciting. That Deadline article, which I feel like we talked about 20 minutes ago, also mentioned that there will be a premiere at the Met in New York City on December 13th, as well as a premiere in London on December 16th. I love that it's at the Met.
I mean,
I think that's amazing.
It's kind of perfect.
Yeah.
I mean,
so you can imagine a lot of social media posts come December 13th and December 16th. A lot of red carpet, probably a lot of interviews.
I can't wait to see.
I know.
I'm just thinking of what Leah's gonna wear.
I know, I was thinking that too.
Like, I'm thinking of really, like...
She's very fashionable.
Oh my god, yes.
I'm excited for that.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, last bit of news for this week is that we also got a new poster. Like I mentioned, you can find this on Rick's Instagram. And honestly, I think that this might be my favorite poster yet.
I agree. I don't always love the posters where it's a collection of heads floating over, but I feel like centering on just the trio, because they could have included Luke and Clarice and, you know,
Chiron.
Right. They could have included everybody. I think focusing on just the trio, putting them together in this poster, it works for me too. I absolutely love it. We've had so much promotion that didn't involve the trio. It had just Percy or just like the trident or the little headdress that we had in the very first stuff.
Yeah.
I love that we finally have a poster with all three of them.
Yeah, I agree. It's really dynamic. You get them kind of in action poses. You get like a good part of Walker's torso. The only thing that makes me a little sad is Grover is so tiny.
Yeah.
I really wish that he had gotten a little bit more.
I'm blaming it on the Master Bolt.
Yeah. The Master Bolt kind of takes up some room. There's lightning coming down. We see the Minotaur in the top left. We have Annabeth with her knife, which is really cool. We get, I believe it's Olympus in the top right. I'm guessing that's what that is.
I think that's the Underworld.
Underworld.
Because Olympus is in the bottom left.
That's New York City.
Well, yeah. But, like, it's like the Empire State Building is down there.
Right.
So I think the top left is meant to be the Underworld.
I mean, it looks dark because... Mount Olympus is supposed to be, like, white marble and stuff like that. So you're probably right. I just didn't expect them to put the Underworld, like, up in the top corner.
You're not wrong. Yeah. You're not wrong.
Unless that's meant to be, like, Yancey Academy or something, but it just looks very dark and spooky.
I think you're right that it's either Olympus that's dark or it's the Underworld. Right. I don't think it's Yancey. But, yeah, it is very random for it to be at the top of the poster. You're definitely right there.
And then we get the Chimera in the bottom right, standing on, like, a stone boulder kind of thing.
And that thing is terrifying.
It is really scary.
Ugh. It reminds me a little bit of the dragon from Onward at the end.
Oh!
Like, it kind of gives me that vibe.
Yeah.
But scarier.
And then, like you said, we have New York City along the bottom, and it's just, it's a great poster. It's really dynamic.
It is such a good angle for Leah, by the way. Like,
yeah.
She just looks amazing in this poster. I love it so much.
She looks so tough. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that takes us to our discussion for this week. We are going to be tackling Chalice of the Gods chapters 18 through 20, and we are... about halfway through the book at this point.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job, us. Okay, yes. Chapter 18 is entitled, Annabeth Conquers All with Herbal Tea. Ellison indeed does his best to drown Percy until our favorite waterbending demigod loses control and flushes the entire pool and surrounding area, freaking Ellison out something fierce. It's a good thing Annabeth came prepared. Okay, so, yes. Ellison is indeed trying to drown Percy, and... it's quite the feat to have an effect on Percy, but he definitely does.
He gets freaked out. He talks about, like, all the sediment and stuff, like, going through his nose, being forced down his throat. I really liked the comparison that it's like trying to breathe in a sandstorm, because that makes it clear, like, sure, he can usually breathe underwater, but, like... sometimes it's difficult to breathe, you know, us as human beings, like, standing outside. If it's too windy and you can imagine all this water coming at you, it's going to be hard to catch your breath.
Well, just this summer, us here in Ohio had a lot of air quality issues because of the fires in Canada.
Yeah.
The air quality had diminished quite a bit here to the point where it makes it hard to breathe because there's too much smoke and sediment and things in the air. It's the same thing here. Percy wouldn't drown, or couldn't drown, really, in a pool of water. But when you kick up so much silt and gross stuff, it makes it hard for even a son of Poseidon to breathe and exist in that world. So, like, it definitely does. It fits right in with, like, that's why he's having trouble. It's not because he's underwater. It's because the silt and the sediment is just messing with him.
Yeah.
He's being whipped around so fast, and all this stuff is being, swirled up around him. And Percy, he likens it to being a child who believes you have a control of your emotions, and then you watch a sad commercial, movie, whatever, and it makes you cry, and you're denying that, like, I'm not crying, like, whatever. Yeah. Like, it's a childish need to be in control when your emotions have taken you over. Like, mm-hmm. It happens. And he likens this explosion of rage that comes out of him to that. Like, he feels like he's in control, but everything is so out of his control and he's not able to fix it that Percy just loses his mind and loses control of his rage. And when he does that, he blasts all of the water out of the pool. Like, yeah. it flushes up the sides of the like cliffside around it that Annabeth's currently sitting on top of. It flushes all the water up the sides and it pulls all that sediment and silt with it, so that when it it deposits on the walls of the cave and all that, so when it flushes back in moments later, so much of that garbage is left behind and it leaves the water a heck of a lot clearer than it was before.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what Ellison was, sure Percy wasn't going to do a good enough job of.
Yeah.
But it cleaned the water, and so therefore we got, it was fun to see that even in Percy's rage and him losing control, what he really did was what he promised he was going to do.
Right, yeah.
Like, it's so funny that even in losing absolute control in this moment, he still, did what he meant to do.
Yeah. I actually love this scene a lot because I love that Rick sort of explains how demigod powers aren't always consistent, that your emotions can affect them. Because when we were going through the first series, we talked a lot about Percy's powers, how strong he was. Some people think that he's OP, he's overpowered, and they just don't really know, how realistic it is compared to the other demigods who aren't quite as strong. But to me, it makes sense because he's the son of one of the big three, which first and foremost is going to make him automatically stronger. Mm-hmm. He's now 17, so he's older, he's grown into his powers, he has more control over his emotions and his abilities, and he's gotten so much experience as a demigod that he's been training for years at this point, for 5 years, so he really knows how to do this. Even when he loses control, he still kind of knows, like you said, what he's doing. I mean, he's still cleaned everything.
Yeah.
Plus, his emotions are tied to his powers, and he was truly terrified. He thought he was going to drown, and that's not a fun feeling. So, to me, I really liked, I don't know if Rick did this on purpose, because he's, over the years, heard people talking about how OP Percy is, but I just like the idea that he kind of provided us with a little bit of an explanation.
Yeah, and it's just, I agree that, we've talked about this a lot, where sometimes it does feel like Percy has too much power, and sometimes he doesn't have enough, and here, it's not really that he wasn't powerful enough, because he believed he could do this, but he's in an environment where he has previously felt safe as can be, even when he wasn't conscious. Falling out of the Arc de Triomphe, no. falling out of the St. Louis Arch, and, into the water, and he was unconscious when he hit the water and was still safe in his bubble and so he has had so many weird occasions to worry, but he's learned that water is a safe place, and now he's in the water being forced to feel powerless. It makes complete sense that this would be a time where he completely loses control.
Right.
This has been his safe place for himself and no one else. This is the one place in the world where Zeus can't touch him. So it's I can see why in this instance especially, he's just lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it does a lot to kind of temper that he's not always perfect. He doesn't always have control. Yeah, he might have a lot of power, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's always good either.
Right.
Okay, so 10 years later, moving on. But it's a good point and a really good scene.
Yeah.
I love that one of his first thoughts once he feels the water crash back in on him is, did I just drown Annabeth?
Yes.
Where is Annabeth? He feels like he just pushed all the water in the world away and pulled it back. That's how dramatic, where it really feels like it's just this pool. Having read the following scenes of this chapter, It really was just the pool he was in, but he feels like he's touched all the water in the world.
Because he says something about digging deep down into the underworld and, like, pulling the water up from there.
So from its,
like,
source.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big deal.
I mean, Iron Flame. Anyway. Yeah. Just leaving it at that. No spoilers. No, like, it does. It feels like he's digging deeper than he ever has before. And it felt to him like he was touching the entire world at once. And I just love that one of his first thoughts when he comes up to the top is, where's Annabeth?
Yeah. Like,
is she okay? Did I screw up? How is she? And she is just sitting pretty.
She's fine.
You know, she is not at all surprised by what just happened. It's just Percy being Percy, and these things happen when, you know, he's out of control. And she's sitting on the ledge above the pool next to Ellison, who is currently freaking out because of what just happened. But she's also talking Percy up while also, like, making a little, you know, making a little bit fun of him. Like, yeah, he can be a little scary when he gets like that.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Look at how, you know. And it's actually Ellison who first admits that Percy did a stellar job at cleaning. It's mm-hmm. not, I don't know what Annabeth said prior to Percy being there, but, like, Ellison's the one who points out, like, he really did a good job. Like, he did what he promised.
Yeah.
I was the one being a sarcastic jerk. Maybe I, you know, maybe I should have taken him seriously. Not all demigods have had this kind of reaction with me. So, you know. But I love that bit with Annabeth and Ellison just him, Percy popping to the surface and they're both just sitting there. And she's got her arm around him and, like, talking to him. And it's just, it's a good visual.
Yeah.
I loved the mention of the New River smell.
That's so funny.
Like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You definitely know what old water smells like.
Yeah.
But, like, New River, I don't know if I know what that really
just
smells like.
Fresh? Yeah, I don't know.
Not dank and dirty.
Yes.
And gross. That's pretty much it. And as Annabeth's sitting talking to Ellison, she kind of points with her eyes down the bank a little bit to try and get Percy's attention. Percy has already thought in his head, where is the staff? Did I blast it to, you know, past Yonkers? Like, where is it? And we can kind of tell Annabeth is pointing him toward the staff, but Percy hasn't quite figured that out yet. He does, though, and eventually goes and gets it. I thought the bit with Ellison at that point was a little weird, because, like, Percy was like, I'm gonna go, and Ellison's like, yeah. Like, I don't know why Ellison would be, like, ashamed that Percy has to go get the staff. Like, it seemed like there was some weird emotion going on in
yeah.
that moment. And I couldn't quite put my finger on what was happening.
I feel like my takeaway from that was more that Ellison was, like, a little afraid of Percy still. And so he's like, yeah, yeah, go get the staff. Like, he kind of didn't mind him, like, kind of leaving for a second. But there also could have been some shame of him, like, breaking down and stuff like
that's
that,
fair.
Too.
That's fair. Yeah, it just, the one little bit from this chapter where I was like, I'm not really sure what he was getting at with that. But, yeah, no, makes sense, makes sense. It's at this point, as Percy is fetching the staff, that he hears Grover playing Help by the Beatles on his panpipes, and he hustles back toward Annabeth to try and get things moving along so they can go save Grover. Annabeth is dishing up a hot glass of tea from her thermos that she brought full of herbal tea, because Annabeth is nothing if not always prepared for everything. She thought the tea would be a good gift for Ellison if they needed a gift. So she brought not only a hot thermos of tea, but also tea bags to, like, use. And it came in handy because it calmed Ellison down. They were able to talk through what just happened and all of this stuff. And they also schedule cleaning time for demigods to come use the pool.
Yes.
Which I think is fun.
Yes, it is. Two things. One, I love that the tea was, like, chamomile tea, and she was like, stop drinking that green tea. It's putting you on edge, because I don't know if everybody knows this, but there's a lot of caffeine in green tea.
Yes.
So
it's very good for you, but has a lot of caffeine.
Yeah. So, like, if you're an anxious person, drinking a lot of tea, just like drinking a lot of coffee, like, it's not.
Switch to decaf.
Yeah.
Herbal teas have very little caffeine, if any, so
yeah.
Try that.
And chamomile tea is good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you could also drink that. Anyway, it's our little tip of the day.
There you go.
But yeah, the fact that every other Saturday, demigods can come clean their sacred objects and stuff like that. I love that this wasn't even part of the plan, at least that we know of. Maybe it was part of Annabeth's plan the whole time.
Annabeth always has plans.
Yeah. But, like, did Allison just offer straight up, or did she kind of negotiate it as a way to, like, calm him down, being like, oh, you know, Percy would really appreciate if you allowed demigods to come, and then, like, he wouldn't be mad. And Allison's like, yeah, whatever, to not make him mad at me, you know?
Well, the other thing I thought is Allison clearly, after escaping the pool in you know, Percy's rage, maybe he feels guilty that he could have just let him clean the staff. Percy promised to clean the water. If he hadn't been sarcastic and mean and done all this stuff, he wouldn't have gotten scared himself. So I think, like, maybe he feels a little guilty, and Annabeth kind of pounced on that and was like, you know, you wouldn't have to feel this way, and Percy wouldn't have had to explode if you would have just understood that demigods aren't all evil, and yeah, that some of us really are just trying to help the god we're trying to help, or whatever. And so maybe we need some time for, you know, like, maybe she just saw the moment and was like, this will diffuse things, it'll give us something to talk about while Percy figures out whatever's going on down there. I'm going to distract Ellison. Like, I think this was just like a Annabeth in the moment using all of her logic to get everybody the best solution to this as possible.
Right.
But yeah, very interesting scene all around, for sure. So Percy, before they, like, leave Ellison brings up the whale yoga at Poseidon's palace, and Percy agrees to put in a good word with Poseidon. I still can't tell if Percy 100% meant it, or if it's just, like, him being like, yeah, I'll definitely, and then walks away like, can I have whale yoga? Like, I feel like he was serious in this moment and was actually going to talk to Poseidon about it for Allison.
I think he is, because he kind of mentioned it offhand, like, you know, what do you want from me in order for me to clean this staff? Oh, we could, you know, you could do yoga and watch the whales swim by. And then, you know, Allison's like, did you really mean that? And Percy's like, well, I mean, it was a joke, but, like, I mean it now because, yes, like, if that makes you happy.
Like, I kind of loved that he seemed serious. Like, yeah, I'll talk to Poseidon. We'll see what happens. Like, yeah, you know, and I just kind of love that. Like, it may have started out as just a throwaway thing, like, whale yoga. Sure, why not? But, like, it could be a thing. And if we ever see Allison doing whale yoga at Poseidon's palace, my heart, yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be great. So then the last bit of this chapter, Ellison goes back to being in the water with his tea and disappears, basically. And Annabeth and Percy have a little convo about how they're gonna help Grover. And Annabeth lets him know that she has hamster-flavored snake treats to try and save Grover, and that Percy is going to be playing the distraction with Iris's staff and creating pretty rainbows for the snakes to be distracted by. And that is the plan, and we'll see how that develops yeah, in the next chapter.
Yeah.
All right, so that brings us to favorite lines. Karen, what was yours?
Well, I chose three because
there were a lot.
There were so many good ones yeah, in this chapter. And I was like, I want to talk about them all. So I'm going to. This is our podcast and we can do whatever we want.
I pick two all the time. Yeah. Trust me.
My favorite one was it came fairly early in the chapter, and it's when Percy's like, controlling water was something I did instinctively, only when I was scared or angry. Kind of like the Hulk, except with plumbing.
It's a good one.
Which is perfect.
Yeah.
I also really liked, I had apparently given the River Ellison my super deluxe Poseidon wash package, complete with triple foam conditioner, undercarriage rust protection, and extreme shine wax.
It's a very Rick
yeah,
kind
it
of
is,
line.
It
yeah,
is.
So, so Rick.
And then lastly, you know, the cherry on top. Oh, I never kid about whale yoga.
I mean, I would love to, like, do yoga while watching whales.
Yeah.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
It sounds very atmospheric.
It does.
With some whale sounds, but, like, actual whale sounds.
Right.
That would be stellar. Yeah, mine is Percy, when he first hears Grover playing Help on the panpipes, Percy says, Grover'd given up on Duran Duran. Now he was playing the Beatles' Help. I took this as a subtle message that he was getting tired of leading the snake parade. There's something about listening for, like, Duran Duran or something like that and hearing, help, I need somebody. Like, it's so perfect, and I love that Grover
chose that. It probably helps if you're, like, familiar with that song, which I am not. I mean, I got the general gist because the name of it is literally Help.
Yeah, it's Help, I need somebody, help, not just anybody, help. You know, I need someone, help. Do, 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 do. Like, that's... That's the lyrics of the chorus. A whole lot more to the verses, but the chorus is literally just that. So it's a great choice by Grover, and I love it so much. Okay, and then we have to do favorite moments. Karen, what was yours?
Oh, I'm letting you go first because it's literally my favorite too. I decided not to pick anything else.
Sounds good. Mine is definitely Annabeth being prepared and consoling Allison.
Yeah.
It's you know, there's so much going on with Percy in this scene, but it all is dwarfed by Annabeth just being calm and understanding her opponent coming into this, you know, prepared with a backpack full of tea and knowing that, you know, this god is going to need this and this is how we're going to get through this and not having to tell Percy. She knew Percy's going to do what Percy needs to do. I'm prepared for my half of this. He doesn't necessarily need to know that I brought supplies and have this and have this. Like, it's just that, like, innate trust and watching Annabeth with Allison and just being so comforting and nurturing and knowing exactly how to help this situation along, it just makes me love her all the more.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Just her being prepared for literally everything, just knowing exactly what to do and say next, it's just perfect Annabeth.
This is the Annabeth you get when you're not going event to event to event to event. When you're not on a quest and you're running from danger to danger to danger. When she has time to think through a problem, to get the things that will, you know, have her most prepared to handle the situation, mm-hmm. whatever situation comes up, you get an Annabeth who is constantly and eternally in control. And I love that we're getting to see that because this quest is different than the quests we've seen before.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do to prepare for, like, everything.
Yeah.
When you're preparing for small things, for one or two things, when you're, you know your opponent, it's a little different than when you're just running around aimlessly trying to solve a big problem.
Yeah.
And that wraps up that chapter, so I'm going to throw it to Karen for chapter 19.
All right, jumping into chapter 19, I taste the rainbow, and it's pretty nasty. In this chapter, Percy is tasked with distracting the snakes while Annabeth saves Grover, and he literally turns into a rainbow in order to tell her how much he loves her. I loved this chapter.
It's a good one.
Yeah. I love that, going back to our music discussion, Percy was like, Grover playing YMCA is clearly a call for help because anybody playing YMCA is a call for help.
Like, there's only if you're using the song Help to call for help, there's only one song worse than that, and it's YMCA.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's delightful.
Also loved that Annabeth trolls Percy by telling him he has to skip through the field to set off the staff and make it turn into rainbows to distract the snakes.
Like, he even points out, like, at the very end, she's like, make sure to skip.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like she mentioned it and hoped he'd do it. Like, she drove it home. Like,
and called him Skippy and
make sure you're skipping, Skippy. Like, it's delightful.
It was so good. And, like, Percy does it because he's gullible and he trusts Annabeth.
Right.
And then he figures out pretty quickly and just starts running instead because it's much faster. But I love that, like, we don't get that side of Annabeth a whole lot. Like, the part where she kind of, like, I mean, she's always called him seaweed brain and stuff, but the part where she's sarcastic, like, she's a lot more serious most of the time. So, like, to see this interaction with him where she's the one kind of instigating it, I really loved that.
Same. It's lovely.
So he does start running, and he creates this 50-foot-long rainbow that sort of trails behind him. I bet that would be beautiful. I just kept thinking about how awesome this would look on screen.
Right? It's hard not to now. It's really hard.
And then Percy, because this kind of falls in line with this book and him being wistful and him actually thinking about being a kid a lot, he remembers being a child and getting excited about flying a kite only for it to get zapped by lightning in the middle of a blue sky.
Freaking Zeus.
Now, my question is, do we actually know when Zeus found out about Percy? Because it sounds like he was pretty young when he was flying the kite. He references heebie-jeebies, so, like, maybe he was 8, or maybe that was just because he was just 8. We don't really know for sure. They didn't put, like, a timestamp on this memory. But, like, do we actually know canonically when Zeus found out that Percy was the son of Poseidon?
I mean, I think I always assumed that he found out when Percy was born. Okay. Like, I feel like the gods are aware when a demigod is born. Maybe they are, maybe, you know, I don't know. But, like, in my head, like, a child of the big three, when they're born, is, like, an event.
Yeah.
Especially after having not had any children for so long. Like, I figured, like, Poseidon couldn't hide it.
Right.
And so, maybe Poseidon tried, but, like, couldn't hide it, and Zeus got mad learning that this is what was going, you know, what had happened. So, like, I just always assumed that it was when he was born, but maybe it was a, you know, like, Zeus could feel something.
As he got older.
Yeah, like, it got stronger and stronger, and so once he got to be about 8 years old, Zeus became aware that there was a son of Poseidon running around New York City.
Plus, I mean, Annabeth was 7 when she ran away because the monsters got to be too much, so maybe it was just that age where, like, they're starting to smell like demigods.
Right, like, the monsters are aware of them, so are the gods.
Yeah. That would make sense. I wasn't sure if anybody remembers, like, a mention of Zeus in particular finding out that Percy was the son of Poseidon. I'd be very interested because for some reason this surprised me that he was so young and then Zeus was already like, you can't have kites,
right? The sky is my domain. Your kite is a threat. Like, no, Zeus, it's not. But, you know, do you, guy, I guess.
Yeah. So Percy is being chased by the snakes, but he's really starting to lose steam after cleaning the cavern and exploding the river. He's kind of disoriented. He doesn't know which way is out. He gets turned around. So he climbs up on a rock outcropping to stay safe from the snakes. And Kristen's already smiling because I just wrote in all caps, tremors!
Yeah.
Which, I don't know if I've mentioned tremors on this podcast yet.
May not have.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite movies. Unironically, I love this movie so much, and I've seen all 7 because, yes, there are 7, though I have not seen the TV show, which is surprising. But that happens a lot in Tremors. They have to climb on rocks to stay away from the giant sandworms.
I was going
to
say, giant sandworms stay on the rocks.
And so it just made me happy. Made me think of Tremors.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. I didn't even think of that, but now that, it totally works. Totally works.
Yeah. And so the horned serpents do kind of want to eat Percy. They keep going, yum, yum. Like, I mean, he interprets their hissing as yum, yum, which was really funny. And this really got me thinking, and so I looked up horned serpents because, like I've said before, my boyfriend is, like, really into reptiles and stuff, and I was like, is this a real snake? Is it based off of a real snake? Horned serpents are definitely a thing in mythology around the world, including a lot of Native American mythology, which I thought was really interesting. Greek mythology, they're called Cerastes. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Cerastes. And they can either have 2 large ram-like horns or 4 pairs of smaller horns. I feel like the ones that we saw on the cover were two small horns. So it was a little bit different. That was the UK edition that we saw them. And it doesn't seem like this is based on any real serpent.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think they're meant to be something magical. It's why they're in this pool. It's why they're, you know, like, it's a more of a magical area, so you're not really seeing them in the real world kind of thing.
Yeah, but I just thought that was kind of cool. I'm, like, interested in snakes now.
Right, always.
Percy starts using the staff to kind of entrance the serpents like you would a laser pointer with cats, except for my cat, apparently, who could not care any less about laser pointers.
She doesn't like boxes.
Nope.
She doesn't like laser pointers. Is she actually a cat?
You know what she's obsessed with more than anything else? Popcorn. We get out a bag of popcorn and she comes right over and will sit in your face until you give her some.
I was gonna say popcorn and the like Cheetos used to be.
Oh yeah.
Like she used to sit next to you while you're eating any sort of cheese covered. Like she would steal one and then just lick it for an hour and a half. Like she would never eat it.
Yeah.
She just licked the powder off the edge. I'm like, you are such a weirdo.
But she'll eat popcorn. She loves it so much. Like, I mean, I think she gets crazier about that than like chicken and stuff.
That's
it's just so funny.
Yeah,
I'm the weirdest cat in the world. But it's fine. She's cute.
She's adorable.
All that matters. After he uses the staff like a laser pointer, he starts thinking about, oh my gosh, I might actually die. The one thing I wish I could do before I die is tell Annabeth how much I love her.
The other bit,
Percy Jackson.
The other bit that he throws in there about how he hopes they don't come for him because they're just going to get themselves in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I hope they don't come to try and save me because they're just going to get themselves in more trouble and they're going to be, you know, in the same situation. And, like, the fact that in this moment, he's got this clarity of, like, I wish I could tell Annabeth I love her one more time. I wish that there was a way to do that. I don't want them to come find me. I don't want them to try because it's just going to get, you know, like, how can I just die quietly here on this rock so that they won't, so that they won't come after me? And
that was so sad. How do I just die quietly?
Like, but that's like what's going on in his head. And it just, it's so mature.
It is.
Like,
I mean,
it's sad, but it is, it's so mature of him to be thinking in this moment, not just, I don't want to die. Someone save me. Someone help me. He's thinking, the last thing I want is for these people I care about. I just hope they got out. I hope they left. I hope they're gone. I don't want them to deal with this. I don't want them to have to deal with my body. I don't want them to have to think about why they couldn't save me. He's like, I hope they just went. And we know better, but like, I love that that's the mindset he has here.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is really mature in the fact that he's thinking about Annabeth and how much he loves her and how that's his last thought is he just wants to tell her that. Oh my gosh, I love them so much. And the power of his love makes him start floating. And it's because he basically has a message for Annabeth. The message is that he loves her. And so the staff, being the staff of a messenger god, like that was its original purpose, decides, oh, okay, you have a message to deliver. I'll go help you deliver it.
Let's float.
Yeah, let's just float away. And he literally becomes a rainbow in order to deliver this message. He says it tastes like copper and smells like burning plastic. I really want to know, like, why Rick chose those two things in particular.
Right?
Like, for some reason, the copper, like, kind of makes sense to me, but why burning plastic?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder, like, if he did research on,
is it like
the...
Okay, here's me putting my thinking cap on. Is it, like, the different light wavelengths interacting, it's, like, fierce, it's so violent that,
maybe,
like, it's burning the ions that it's passing through, so it smells like the different, like, molecules in the air are being burnt, and so then he's smelling all the...
Or, like, Percy turning into a rainbow, like, yeah, like, his molecules breaking down and... This feels like a don't question the science moment.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that's my guess.
Yeah.
It has something to do with the rainbow cutting through the air or Percy becoming a rainbow cutting through the air. That it's, maybe it is because he's not Iris. So, like, him becoming the rainbow as opposed to, like, Iris becoming the rainbow, it smells different. Like, if Iris did it, maybe it smells less, like, plastic.
Although he does say, now he understands why Iris wants to burn incense all the time, which I thought was really funny.
It is quite funny.
Yeah. And he surprises Annabeth at the cave entrance and tells her he loves her and that he loves G-Man, too. Thought that was really cute. I love that Grover's just, like, bent over, like, breathing really hard, and he's like, yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
Well, Percy's like,
go kiss your girlfriend.
I have a message for you.
Yeah.
Like, the way he just kind of arrives on scene, and Annabeth's like, how did you get here? And it's like, yeah, it's all so wonderful and just very, very them.
Yeah, it's so cute. And then, you know, mission complete. They were successful, so they head home, and he burps Violet and Chartreuse the whole way.
Oh, Percy.
So what was your favorite line from this chapter?
It was Annabeth's instructions to Percy before he takes off skipping through the fields. He says, Annabeth had instructed me to skip through the fields while holding Iris's staff. She was pretty sure this would create a beautiful rainbow, which would draw the serpent's attention with a high level of, ooh, pretty.
Yeah.
And I loved the idea of that. It made me giggle.
Yeah. We'll get to this in a second, but, like, I kind of understand why Kati put the serpents and, like, that scene on the front of the UK cover, because, like, this was just a great chapter and, like, a great moment, and, like, there's so much more behind it than you initially think. Like, I saw the U.S. cover, and I was like, okay, this makes sense. It's like a Greek urn or something like that, and a piece of pottery, and it has, like, the trio on it. It just felt very in line with what you would expect. And then the U.K. cover was so different, and I was like, what is going on here? But, like, this really is a momentous scene for the book. So I'm really glad that she chose to do that.
I agree. It's a quest, but it's also such an important moment for, like, Percy and Annabeth because of everything that happens in this chapter and in the chapter before it. Like, it's a good moment from this book to use as a cover. Like, I'm really glad she did too.
Yeah. And so my favorite lines, because I also had to pick more than one again, was when Percy said, "Greetings, Earthlings." So funny.
Yeah.
It was great. And also, just because you're right doesn't mean I don't resent it. I feel like I could use that in, like, every day of my life.
It's chef's kiss. Yeah. It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
What was your favorite moment?
It's Percy being Percy and throwing himself headfirst into his assignment, not taking any note of direction of travel or return heading. Like, he's been told to skip/run through the field, and he takes off. And he's so determined to make the prettiest rainbow and to distract the snake so well that he's kind of tired from everything else that he just runs and he doesn't make any sort of note of where he's going or where he should be going or how he's going to get to the cave entrance at the end of all this. It feels very Percy to just take off. And he doesn't have Annabeth to tell him, like, we're heading that direction, so maybe loop around or, you know, keep an eye on this thing as a heading to know where you're going.
Yeah.
And he's not in the water, so he doesn't have that innate sense of direction he does when he's in the water.
Right.
So it just cracked me up that it's Percy just running through a field, and he just takes off.
I just love the idea of, like, he's just determined to make the prettiest rainbow. Will Ferrell, SNL. Look what I can do. That's what I was thinking.
Like Annabeth said, I should skip. Look what happens when I run. And he runs as fast as he can, and it's just the prettiest rainbow.
Yeah.
I love it so much. But then, as Percy being Percy, he just lucks into a solution that saves his life. Like, you cannot undervalue luck in Percy's life, because he gets himself into situations where he really should just die.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's holding Iris's staff, he has a way out. And
because he loves Annabeth so much.
Right, and because his last thoughts were about how much he loves her and not how much it's gonna hurt to get eaten alive by snakes or, you know, all of these other things. Because he's thinking about his love for her, he has a way out. And it's just so wonderfully Percy and Annabeth and so wonderfully Rick Riordan that this chapter was just lovely.
Yeah, it was really great. My favorite moment was Percy and the snakes, just in general. The laser pointer bit was, like, really funny to me. But also him wondering if he just started a new religion by ascending to the heavens on a rainbow.
Oh my gosh.
Like, the snakes would tell future generations about this weird kid who just,
with,
like,
the rainbow thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Delightful.
So funny.
So funny. So funny. And that brings us to chapter 20, entitled Iris Takes Venmo. So in this chapter, Percy and Annabeth return Iris's staff to her and learn that Ganymede's cup is somewhere in Greenwich Village. Grover is off getting his model on with Blanche at the same time, by the way.
I love that. I just have to start this off with the thought of the staff beating up the FedEx man because the staff thinks he's competition.
Yeah, this chapter starts with Percy, like, talking about what it's like to have this staff, because they don't return it right away. Like, he's with him for a day or two. And, yes, one of the examples is FedEx man delivers something for, I think it's invitations for his mom or something.
Or her books.
What it was. It was her books. And, yeah, the staff goes nuts and tries to beat up the FedEx guy. And it's... It's just, again, it's one of those details that just makes you love these books that much more. But after that, Percy and Annabeth are ready to return Iris's staff to her, and Grover is getting his photo shoot on with Blanche, as we knew was their trade from before.
Right.
And I just loved this description of what Blanche is doing with Grover. She's going to dress him in a kilt of withered palm leaves, drape him across a burnt log, and photograph him surrounded by dead insects. Like, I think this is supposed to be, like, hot. Like, I think it's supposed to be, like, artistic, but it's also, like, I think it's, like, Grover.
Like a boudoir
right, kind like, of. That's what happened in my head, was I was thinking, it's like, is this, like, Seder boudoir?
Seder boudoir.
And if it is, because Grover goes on to say he wants to give it to Juniper.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, is this, like, sexy Grover? Like... draped over this burnt log with dead cockroaches and things surrounding him.
Oh,
and
my just God. Like,
yeah. So that's what was going through my head.
Oh my gosh.
For a good portion of the beginning of this chapter. Funny. I can't stop thinking about Grover being laying over this log in a kilt and nothing else. Like, okay. It's fantastic. Anyway, I'm so glad they didn't just forget about Blanche. I'm glad this is in here because it's gold.
It is.
It's so lovely. And also explains why Grover's not there.
Right.
So, moving on. with the staff in hand, it's not going to be hard to find Iris because all Percy has to do is say, hey, staff, I want to find Iris.
Yeah.
And the staff basically leads them straight there.
Yeah.
So they end up in Lower Harlem, where Iris has a booth set up on the sidewalk amongst many produce vendors selling her crystals. And we learn very quickly, Iris gets a glimpse of her staff and gets so excited. And we learn that she named her staff Mercedes, which is just funny to me. It's a kind of random name.
Remember how we were trying to figure out, like, who slash what Mercedes was? Because it was in that Reed Riordan article, and I definitely did not think it was the staff. Like, I think we thought it was either her chariot or possibly, like, a monster that he had to, like, go bathe or something like that, which would have been hilarious, but I kind of love that the staff was named Mercedes.
Right? It totally, yeah, it's cute. And Iris promises Mercedes that she will treat her better and won't let her get so dingy like she did before. And I loved her attachment to this. It was quite funny. As they're, like, delivering the staff and they're watching Iris have this reaction to Mercedes, they're trying to get to the point softly on Annabeth's part because she knows better with gods and goddesses. Iris seems reticent to tell Annabeth and Percy about the location of the chalice, which is what they did all of this for. They went and cleaned the staff to get the location of the chalice. That was the trade. And Iris is, like, dancing around the topic as much as possible, trying not to give them the information, asking them if they'd rather take some crystals or some bath salts instead. Like, why don't we just make that trade? You don't want this info. It, you know.
Yeah.
So... whatever she found out must be not great in some way, shape, or form. Either it's not great for her or it's not great for the gods. I don't know which. But eventually, Annabeth kind of gets Iris to let go of some of this information. Iris has a fairly good idea of where the cup is. She lets them know that it's in Greenwich Village. And then they start asking, like, okay, so do we just, like... you know, go looking around Greenwich Village for a cup, like, what do we do? And Iris tells them that it's someone named Gary.
Do you have any idea who Gary is?
I feel like I should. I feel like I should. I feel like this should be a telling sign, and I have no idea.
Because as a reminder, I've already read this book. I know what's going to happen. Kristen has not.
Nope.
So, I mean, at this point, I was like, who's Gary? No idea.
Funny enough, I had the exact same thought that Percy did.
Did you?
I thought about the SpongeBob SquarePants character named Gary and was like, I don't know any other Garys. Gary Indiana and Gary the snail. That's all I've got.
Gary Indiana.
Like, that's all I've got when it comes to Garys, especially, like, famous Garys. And so then I started trying to, like, think of, like, gods or demigods whose nickname could be Gary, but, like, I couldn't come up with anything telling, like, anything obvious. So I have no idea who Gary is.
Okay.
I'm very interested to learn, and now I'm a little more interested because you asked me if I have any guesses, so I feel like I should know who Gary is.
I just can't wait to get your reaction to the reveal because I just really liked it, and so I can't wait to see what you think.
I'm excited, for sure. But they ask her, are we just supposed to wander around asking for Gary and looking for a chalice? Like, what are we doing? And Iris tells them that they can locate Gary by using a vial of pure nectar concentrate, which will be naturally drawn to the chalice and will lead them straight to it. And I just love that. First of all, Iris has a solution. Like, this is how you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. It's not like they have to try and find Gary and figure out how to draw him out or any of that. There is a solution. But I also love that it feels like there's going to be another quest. And Percy is like,
No.
We just did this whole thing. And you're telling me that you're going to make me do something else to get this stupid... And then there's, like, an easy solution.
Mm-hmm.
$5.
Yeah.
Annabeth has $5.
Yeah.
Because Annabeth is always prepared.
Yeah.
And boom, it's easy, it's done, handled. Mm-hmm. Let's go find Gary. Like,
yeah.
I love that it's kind of set up like a cheat. Like, oh, we might have to do another quest because we need this thing that she's not just going to give us. But I love that in true, like, vendor form, she's just going to sell it to him.
And, like, Iris is a fairly reasonable god, so I think it makes sense that she just charges them $5 for it.
Yeah.
But also, I thought that this was a really clever solution so that they are not just, like, randomly stumbling upon him or, like, have to go search for him. I mean, this is a direct route. And we know that Rick wrote this book, and I assume the next two books in this trilogy, to kind of be about the size of the original Percy Jackson books, which are a little bit smaller than all the other series. And so, to me, this was just a way to, like, cut out that, like, fluff.
Yeah.
And just, like, get to the point. And I just thought it was a really good idea, and it does kind of streamline the story.
And it makes logical sense.
Yeah.
The cup has the proper certain properties, and because of its properties, pure nectar concentrate straight from the vine would be unnaturally attracted to the cup, like, supernaturally attracted.
Right.
So, like, yeah, it would lead you to it, which totally, yeah. It totally makes logical sense in my brain, so... Mm-hmm. I was a big fan. And that is where we leave this, we leave our story. And we will get back to that sometime very soon. Hopefully, maybe. We'll find out. Okay, so we still have to do favorite lines and favorite moments. I think both of us have two.
Yeah.
One of yours I had written down.
Did you?
And I eliminated it because I had these other two I could not choose between. I'm so glad you picked it, so I'm going to let you read yours first.
Okay. My first one was when they were using the staff to lead them to Iris, and Percy's like, I was afraid it might turn Annabeth and me into a rainbow and beam us to Wisconsin. Then we'd be coughing 20 different colors all evening, and we'd also be in Wisconsin.
As a Detroit fan, could not feel this pain anymore. Like, I loved that this was in there. I was like, I know Rick's not, like a massive football fan or anything,
yeah.
I don't think. You know, we've never really heard him talk about it that much, but any way to make fun of Wisconsin and or the Packers is good on me, and I loved that this was in there. It has nothing to do with football, but in my brain, it was a diss on the Packers,
yeah.
And I love that so much.
That is really funny. I'm just glad that they didn't choose Ohio, because Ohio
right.
gets the butt of the joke a lot. I mean, I'm... Please, feel free to make fun of Ohio. My heart is not in Ohio. I just happen to live here. But it was nice to see a different
I mean, I would like
state.
To be proud of Ohio. I am not always proud of Ohio. But I would like to be proud of it. And I'm glad that they chose Wisconsin. Because
yeah.
it's worse.
Yeah.
At least sometimes. It's worse.
And then my other one was when Annabeth pays cash for the nectar, and Percy's like, because of course, along with every other strange and archaic tool that she might need, she carried cash.
It's
archaic tool.
It's fantastic.
As somebody who refuses to carry cash, I'm with Percy. Like, literally, if I get cash, like, if people pay me in cash, I give it to my boyfriend because I don't want to hang on to it. I'm like, you can have it. And he's like, that's fine with me. You're just giving me money. And I was like, yes, you are in charge of the dollar bills, not me.
I like some, but I don't like carrying a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit is fine. 10, 20 bucks, whatever, just so you can get a dollar, like a pop from a machine or
yeah.
something. That's fine. But I'm not a big cash carrier either. Okay, and then my favorite quotes, because I have two as well. The first one is... They're both from Percy. The first one is, I don't understand a single word of what I just said, but nobody asked my opinion.
I almost wrote that down, too.
It's so just classic.
Yeah.
I love it. And honestly, it's useful in all the ways. So, definitely love that one. And the other one is, Percy saying, "She let the thought drift away into the land of half-formed thoughts about things that could kill Percy Jackson. I spend a lot of my time in that land." Yeah. It's such a good line.
It is.
And it's so true. And just so many good lines in these three chapters.
Yeah, like, I literally could not pick. They were all just so good.
Yeah, I could have picked more than one for the first two. I just was trying to narrow in.
I was like, nope, I'll pick three.
That's fine. And I had to do two for the final one because I was like, there's just so many. But yeah. I'm glad. I love the Rick quotes that are so quotey and wonderful. And I love that this book has been full of them so far.
Yeah.
Okay, and then our favorite moments. Mine was Percy assuming that they had to get another quest to get the vial of nectar, but Iris just charged him $5 for it. Like, it's that build up again, like, oh, what more do we have to do? And then it's like, oh, nothing.
Yeah.
I really just loved the false build up there. It really just hit me funny.
Yeah.
And then what was yours?
Mine was them being so close to finding out who the chalice thief is. I mean, this is what we've been building toward. We're halfway through the book now, a little bit more. And you could just feel that it's, like, right there, and it's very exciting.
It does feel very close.
Yeah.
And I am definitely looking forward to figuring out who Gary is. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is a huge help. You can leave us questions or comments or ideas for episodes or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have a little bit of feedback this week. We got a message on Instagram from Maria that I wanted to read. It was about our discussion of Chalice of the Gods last week, so I'm going to go ahead and read the whole message for you guys. Maria says, "Hi, I've really been enjoying the Chalice of the Gods discussion. I had a writing craft-related question about Chapter 15 that I've been waiting to ask. I wonder what your thoughts are on the scene between Eudora and Percy when she tells him he could have used Iris and Hebe to write him letters and knocked all three out in one go. When I first read this, I wondered if Rick had structured the novel in such a way that it could have been a standalone if needed. I wondered if this scene was initially in there as a placeholder and it could have gone either way. If he decided the novel was 100% going to be a standalone, everything was set up for Percy to get three Rick letters in this book. And Eudora could explain that option. If he decided to go the trilogy route, which I'm personally very happy about, then we get this scene with Eudora saying, well, you could have had all three done, but nope. Just curious to hear your thoughts on this." It never occurred to me.
I literally had the same exact thought as her.
See, that's fabulous. It never occurred to me that that was a possibility. But now, thinking back to the discussion around Chalice of the Gods, originally we weren't sure if it was going to be one story or three. And the way Rick was leaning, it sounded like one story. And then it seemed like there was going to more than likely be more. Mm-hmm. So this is totally genius. I think Maria nailed it on the head, and obviously you as well. I think it seems completely natural that Rick wrote himself a way out if something were to happen where the other two books just weren't going to be a reality. He was too busy, too much going on, had other ideas eating at his brain and didn't have the time to devote to it. He could have gotten it all done in one book. But by the end, he knew what the next step was going to be, and he was ready to do that, so he just made it another joke that the gods played on Percy, and it fits perfectly
into the story. I think it's even better this way, that, like, he could have, and then he can't now.
Yeah. Didn't even occur to me, but thank you so much, Maria, for writing in, because I love that it basically was just...
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And we just wanted to throw a quick shout-out to Jay Maya, who Karen put up a an Instagram... Okay, I'm terrible
at story.
Thank you. It's like, there's so many words for all the different things. Anyway, she put up an Instagram story about, like, wouldn't it be cool if Jemaya was featured in Percy series? And, like, while I doubt she's going to be... Her music is going to be in season one, because mm-hmm. that's kind of done and wrapped and all that. I would love it if they could fit her song yeah. into season two. And it fits so well with their theming.
There's
and
so many good... Yeah, I mean, she writes songs about Percy Jackson and Persebeth and all of that stuff. And, you know, being a nerd and all that kind of things. Like, it's very on brand. So, hopefully someday...
Right?
We'll get
like, something. We want this for you. Yeah. And so, I wanted to include it here because there's... We had kind of talked a little bit on social media with all the Spotify Wrapped stuff coming up and yeah. Jemaya showing up in a lot of people's lists yeah. because they discovered her music this year.
And she said that she's a top fan of our podcast.
Which I love.
That was very nice.
Yeah, so we just wanted to throw a quick shout out. And yes, we certainly hope that Percy Sirius discovers your music and is like, we need at least one of these songs for an upcoming season because that would just be amazing.
Yeah. So this isn't really feedback, but I just wanted to mention really quickly, because I just saw it on Twitter, that Disney Plus UK just tweeted out, "Win, calling all Percy Jackson fans, are you ready for a quest? To celebrate the release of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, we are giving away 40 tickets to the UK premiere the 16th of December. For your chance to win 2 tickets, simply answer in the comments below which Greek god is Percy Jackson's father. Entries close December 8th at 12 p.m. GMT, UK residents only." So that's very important. UK mm-hmm. residents only. Must be 18 plus to enter. Only 1 entry per person. And they do have a link to terms and conditions. I did not see anything on the regular Disney Plus account tweeting anything.
For the US or any of
right,
that.
But keep an eye on that because they might be giving away tickets to the premiere. Also, I don't know who I have to write to get me and Kristen to this premiere, but I really, really hope that we can get there.
I mean, if it was a thing, I would figure out a way.
Yeah.
I'd figure out a way.
We
somehow,
do it.
Some way. We'd make it happen.
Yeah.
But that is really cool for UK listeners. So, you know, this episode should be out in plenty of time for you guys to still get an entry in. So I really hope that somebody gets a set of tickets and gets to go. If you do, let us know.
Oh my gosh, write in about your experience.
Take pictures. We want to see it. We want to know. Like, yeah, that would be so cool.
It would be.
But with that said, next week we will be talking about Chalice of the Gods chapters 21 through 23 as we get closer and closer and closer to this show premiering. So, yay, just a couple weeks left.
Yeah.
It's so close.
And
okay. I'm going to stop freaking out now. Until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.